listening to the Online Supercoach Podcast, the place where business owners create breakthroughs. Here's your host, AJ Mirza.
All right. So I have something special for you. I have one of my favorite human beings, one of the most powerful coaches that I had the great experience of working with. His name is Kian Lagi, and he is a powerful human who impacts lives in a profound way. And before I get to his amazing gift, I want to go into a quick backstory of how we connected in the first place. So as you know, my company is Online Supercoach. I help various coaches scale from in-person to online. Now, Key and I first met where he had his incredible story of being a former NFL player turned online fitness coach. And when I first connected with him through my friend Melitza, shout out to her, she mentioned that he has an amazing gift and a lot of talent and wants to transform a lot of lives. So Key and I worked together. He had a really powerful growth period where he developed an amazing online program. He was helping people cure their autoimmune diseases, psychosomatic illnesses, and really using unconventional Mahdi and Bind methods to transform their body through nutrition and proper exercises. And over time, Kian started to evolve and he changed his model, right? You get new skills and capabilities and you change your business model. From there, he transitioned into a high-performance coach for people that never settle, using a lot of the same principles from his online fitness business, but now working with high-level people that want the best out of life. So Key and I, we had a great friendship throughout the years. Even after he ended my program, we hung out in Miami, speaking at an event. He came to show support. He's a great guy. We just had this great friendship going on. And a few months back, he said, AJ, you know, I would love to connect with you. I have this really powerful methodology that I would love to put you through. Me being a personal development junkie and always wanting the edge, never wanting to settle, I said, Kian, I love you and I appreciate you, and I would love to go through your process. So we ended up having a Zoom meeting similar to the one we're having now, face-to-face on video. I went in without expectations. I was in a good place in my life. It's not like I needed anything in particular. And we just had this great conversation. And through that conversation, I had a ton of insights and so many different breakthroughs. He called me out of my shit like no one else ever has. He was telling me stuff that I didn't realize that I was doing wrong. And me being an eager student, I was open. I was curious and I wanted more. Wasn't too long after that Key and I started working together. And from that relationship, my life started improving in a profound way. You see, I'm a big believer in hiring coaches, having mentors, having people in my life that could help me far beyond I could help myself. And in my life, I look at my four areas, my health, my wealth, my relationships, and my own personal happiness, and ask myself the same question every day. How can I make it better? How can I improve? So Keaton and I, we developed this amazing relationship, these amazing weekly calls, and through these calls, my life has changed in a profound way. And I want to share some of the amazing gifts that he has and what he's given me throughout the whole process. So not only can I benefit and remind myself of his magic, but you could also take a few nuggets to make your life a lot better. So without further ado, Kian, thanks for being on the line.
AJ, thank you so much for the phenomenal introduction. And magic. That is a great explanation for it, magic. So anybody listening right now, they can expect to hear the magic throughout the whole conversation. So I'm excited to dive deeper into that and share with everybody, all your viewers, a lot of the things that we've been able to do together, but also some of the magic that many people are not aware of.
Yes, yes. No, it truly is magic, right? Because, you know, in fitness or growing your business or really anything you want in life, I find there's two ways of learning, right? It's acquired knowledge through experience, reading books, watching videos, doing the damn thing. And there is magic. And magic is an insight, a breakthrough that changes the way you look at the world, right? And once you have that magical moment, it changes in an instant. And speaking of magical moments, you know, what's like a mantra or a way with words that you like to live your life by?
I'd rather learn through my own experience.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So ever since I was been very, very young, I've been well aware of the things that I'm supposed to do, or the things that are right, or the things that are most noble. But me as a very curious child, and eventually got to a place where I was tired of always following the rules. I'm like, you know what? Damn it. I want to try for myself. So I like to use that mantra for myself, because that is the best way for me to be able to learn is through self-experience, even though it may not be something that's going to bring me the most joy, which is what we're ultimately seeking. It's going to give me a lot of wisdom that I'll be able to gain through that. And also there's certain levels of relatability with other people that are currently going through some of those issues themselves. So it might not be the most noble, might not be the most seen highly in other people's eyes, some of the things that I'll give myself permission to do, but I'd rather learn myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of things that you must acquire through your own knowledge, right, through your own experience. And I agree with that. And speaking of experience, can you just give us a short summary of your own personal backstory? I kind of touched upon it, how you were training for the NFL, but I didn't get into why that didn't work out. And of course, what led you into the world of becoming this amazing coach?
Yeah, absolutely. And AJ, I think it starts with me sitting in the Kansas City Chiefs cafeteria watching practice. And it was before I went to get the MRI that ultimately led to my demise of playing football. But I was sitting there watching practice, and a feeling came over me that was not what I expected. And it was a feeling of almost a little bit of emptiness that I quickly pushed away, because I tried to logically justify to myself that, no, this is fantastic. This is what you worked your whole life for since you were in third grade to accomplish. But my feelings didn't necessarily reflect that. So that was really fascinating in itself. But then I went to go get an MRI on some precautionary injuries that I had in college, and found out that a neck injury that I had was much worse than I initially thought. When I say much worse, the doctor said that I was at a risk factor of 3.5 out of 4 to be paralyzed if I would have played. So that quickly ended my career. But the knowledge I did have from that circumstance was that nothing that I ever do or nothing that I ever accomplish will bring me a level of fulfillment that I'm ultimately looking for. So, which is tends to be one of the biggest things with a lot of high performers, that we think that whatever we accomplish will ultimately bring us a certain level of fulfillment. So at the age of 22, I came to the understanding that none of those things will give me an element of fulfillment that I'm looking for in them. It's got to come through myself. And so after that, I dove into this journey of being able to find true fulfillment and joy within myself. And I read a book called The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. And he spoke about being able to experience a certain level of heaven on earth, in a sense. I'm like, this stuff is fascinating. What is this all about? So I'm like, you know, I want to learn about this. I want to see if this stuff is actually possible. And, you know, I'm learning more and more every day. And since that commitment to myself to discover more about me and what's causing me not to be able to feel fulfillment, because inherently I believe all of us do have a level of joy as our true selves. It's just a lot of learning that we do to teach us that we're not worthy, in a sense. So unlearning a lot of the crap that I did learn, and in the process being able to help people that are on the same journey or that haven't had the realization yet that the things they accomplish won't bring them the fulfillment that they're looking for. So I can take the people that are on that process, that journey, that may have already crashed or in the process of potentially crashing and failing, or are on the path to start that don't necessarily get all the way into it, can help them also come to the realization that the happiness and joy has to come from inside of themselves, causing them to not feel a lot of pain and ultimately resentment towards the process they go through because they feel let down in the end.
Yes, yes. No, that's very powerful. You know, thanks for sharing that. You know, one thing that I can relate to, and I could speak on behalf of a lot of achievers, is having high standards for your life and for yourself. And many times high standards is a great thing, but also it's a weakness because you have high expectations and you expect yourself to be a certain way, to live a certain way, and you have these big goals. And whether you have the goals, you know, you are so focused on that end result, you know, you lose track of the journey. And I can share where I shared very publicly myself, this big goal I had from being a very poor boy and growing up in poverty. I always wanted to become a self-made millionaire. And I was like, I want to become a self-made millionaire. That's been my biggest goal. How can I contribute at a highest level? How can I just create this new standard for myself? And this lifelong journey was difficult, right? To get over a lot of limiting beliefs, a lot of financial fears, becoming a millionaire, and then finally buying my dream house, this amazing mansion that I had on my wall. Like I watched the movie The Secret, had a huge vision board, and it was one of the big items that was a sign for me, a milestone that I found would make me very happy. And I moved into my dream house, felt like $1 million. Oh my God, I am here. I made it. Woohoo! A few weeks in, I had this amazing joy and euphoria, and I was calling my friends, and I was like, wow, this is what it is. You know, when you accomplish your goals and you really live your dreams, you find enlightenment, you're happy forever. And I was riding this amazing wave of momentum. 1 month after moving in to my house, I got hit with the worst depression ever. Every single morning I woke up and I was like, is this it? Is there more to life? I work so hard. Why am I not happy? And I was, you know, pulling my hair with frustration because my entire life was focused on this goal of being a millionaire, moving into this house, having this lifestyle. Now it's my reality and I'm not fulfilled. And that's when I had to go on this long journey of asking the question, why am I not fulfilled? What really makes me happy? And I would love you to touch upon that because I'm sure a lot of people here are probably on the journey and they're frustrated. Maybe they're not getting to where they need to go in the right frame of time, or they accomplish really big things. They have an amazing career, amazing business, just an amazing lifestyle. But the happiness they thought would happen quickly eluded them.
First, AJ, thank you so much for sharing that story. And my story was very, very similar in the way of me saying since I was in third grade, I was going to make it to the NFL. And then the euphoria associated with getting the call or getting calls from all these different teams. And it feels good. You feel on top of the world. And then making it there, I was there watching practice. And then once all the euphoria started to fade away, the real emotions that we did such a good job at covering start to come up. And that's the kind of scary part about it, because then you start to question, yo, like when you make it to that place, like, whoa, like who am I? Like, what do I really want? Like, because obviously this thing that I thought that I wanted didn't give me the fulfillment that I thought it would. So like, am I crazy? Like who really am I? But really, I think one of the biggest things, and I think we'll touch back on that later on, but you have too many people out here trying to discover their why, right? You need to know your why. I had a guy ask me, like, do you know your why the other day? I'm like, the majority of people aren't even in a position to be able to know their why or know what they want because they're operating out of a system that's not even theirs. Mm. You have all these people teaching, what's your why? Why do you do what you do? Well, people don't even know because they're operating out of the lens of their upbringing. They don't even really know who they are. So you got all these people trying to create goals for themselves from a faulty programming standpoint that's not even something that their heart truly desires. Right? So I think that's one of the biggest issues today, which is probably the majority of people that don't end up finding fulfillment in what they're doing, is that they have their sights set on something that's not even the thing that lights their heart on fire, the thing that they truly desire. They're doing it for some other external reason, whether to get validation from, you know, a family member, a mom or a dad, or from other people, or to fill a certain void inside of themselves. So I think that's problem number one, is like you got everybody trying to make these decisions for what they want out of their life when they're still operating from that standpoint of who they're not, right? So that's one of the first things that I do with people. And I think what we did together, AJ, was it's unlearning who you're not first, right? We can't discover your goals and your whys until we unlearn the faulty programming that you've grown up to believe as truth.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think when you were saying that, one thing that was coming up for me was a realization around that time when I was extremely depressed and I was struggling just to get through the day. It was just this feeling that I'm not enough. And because I didn't feel enough, I thought that money, material items, external fame would fill that void. growing up poor, going through a lot of challenges, a lot of trauma in my childhood. It was like, when I get older and I make it, then I'll be enough. And I would love for you to touch upon that, I guess, universal human pain of not being enough, you know, because if we were all enough, we would have a different civilization, right? You go on social media and everything is screaming that I'm not enough. There's a lot of visual interpretations of that. So please touch upon the fact that as humans, oftentimes we don't feel enough.
Yeah, that is an awesome question. I'm really glad we get to dive into that. But really the foundation of it, AJ, is it all starts in the home and it starts with the parents, which I don't think is a relatively complex concept to understand. But really what happens is for so many high performers in particular is that we were never able to fully depend on the people that we were supposed to be able to depend on. And that's our mom and our dads, in particular, our moms. The first part, the first years of our upbringing are very heavily dependent emotionally on support from our mothers. And the majority of the time in the world that we live in, our most people's moms were not in a position to emotionally take care of a child. And that's where a lot of people don't understand the magnitude of raising a child, because the emotional place that you need to be able to be in, not to scare people from it, but to add value to being a parent. Because if you haven't worked through your own shit, then you will project everything onto your child. And so what happens is you have a lot of parents, not to blame parents and not maybe not to say that you'll ever be able to work through all of your traumas. I think it's possible, but most people, especially these older generations, aren't even really aware of traumas unless they got in with a psychologist or they've been dealing deep with that kind of stuff. So all like traumas and childhood issues and these deeper insecurities, like this is all relatively new stuff. So a lot of our parents, like they never dealt with their own shit, and not that they had the opportunity, but they didn't. And then just looking at it objectively, right? And so when our parents aren't in an emotional state to be able to take care of themselves, they can't take care of a child emotionally. And you have so many parents, even that, like a lot of times I hear a lot of high performers, my childhood was fantastic. My childhood was amazing. No, my parents loved each other. I had my siblings, but they're doing that based off the objective understanding of what they think a good, healthy family is, right? But what happens most of the time is that you have parents that are present, but aren't actually present emotionally, right? So they have all these other stressors and problems going on that they're not able to work through themselves. And they think that because they're not showing it to their child from a physical standpoint, their child's not seeing it. But that's the beautiful part about children, and also can be a big con if you haven't dealt with your own stuff, is that your children don't give a shit what you say, right? All they care about is what they're feeling from you. And that's ultimately going to shape a child and going to determine the emotional health of that child. And most of the time, like I said, you have parents that are acting like they have it together, pretending, which teaches the child that we need to pretend that we have it all together all the time, right? And so this might be kind of a weird concept to understand, but it's very relevant, is that a lot of the guys that I work with end up taking on a role as being their mother's husband because the mother is not able to depend on the father for emotional support, which needs to happen in a healthy masculine feminine dynamic. And so the mother, or she never learned how to trust the masculine, that's another topic, but the mother ends up being in a place where she's not emotionally stable and she can't rely on her significant other to be able to be emotionally stable, which a woman is supposed to be able to depend on a man to be able to feel comfortable in her position, to give her the permission to be able to healthfully raise a child. But most mothers are not in that place because they're not receiving the support from the masculine or the man. And so they're trying to emotionally keep it together, but then unconsciously becoming dependent on the child for their emotional state. And I can give an example here, right? For myself, when I was in the womb, when I was a tiny little kid, before you could even have my arms or legs, my mom went through hell and back. My dad was gone for work. Her grandma, the person that was closest to her, ended up dying of cancer. Her mom had a terrible stroke to where she almost died, and she felt very alone. And she actually ended up getting on her knees and said, God, why did you put a baby in me? I can't handle this right now. Right? So me as a child, I'm like, whoa, I'm hearing all of that. I'm a baby. I'm a fetus in the womb. Like I'm actually feeling and hearing all of that. And so what I learned was that I need to be a good little boy so my mom's in an emotional state to be able to take care of me. Right. And so I came out, and also my mom used me a lot emotionally to be able to get herself through those tough times not intentionally, looking at it objectively, not her fault, looking at it objectively, to be able to get through those difficult times. Right? So I learned I had to suppress my emotion to make sure my mom was okay. And she unconsciously was relying on me for emotional stability. So part of me almost became my mom's husband in a sense, right? Now looking at it completely objectively, I took that role on as me, as myself. And my dad actually ended up getting cancer when I was 2 years old too. So to further solidify that, right? So what happens is the mother's not in an emotionally stable place, can depend on the child for their emotional stability, and a child's not meant to be in that role. So what the child learns is that how they're feeling and their emotions, it doesn't matter and it's not relevant. So then we grow up seeing everybody else's emotions around us and seeing societally what we think is cool or what we think would make us feel the best based off of what we're taught from our external environment. We latch on to those things because we think those things are going to bring us a fulfillment that we're lacking within ourselves. But the real reason why people aren't able to have that level of fulfillment themselves is because they were never able to truly be dependent at a very young age on the people that they were supposed to be able to be dependent on. Learning to never be able to be dependent. In order for you to truly be independent, you have to be able to be dependent. And a young child is supposed to be able to depend on their mother and father to be emotionally stable, for them to be able to learn how to be emotionally stable. So that's the reason why most people are walking around lacking fulfillment, is because they're forced to suppress their own emotions at a very, very young age, causing them to look externally for what they think they need to do to feel like they're enough within themselves.
Pow. Whew. Very deep and very profound, very powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I got a lot of insights just hearing that. I'm sure everyone else did as well. If you're listening and you got an insight, I would love for you to share what that is. And I want to ask you a question that kind of segues on that, and feel free to answer it if you have your own way. So we all understand that theoretically, the human experience is about the simple sentence, I'll be happy when. And in our minds, we have this beautiful imagination, right? We can think about the future and how glorious things could be. Wherever we are in life, we have a moment in the future that we are compelled to experience. If we're single, I'll be happy when I have this amazing soulmate, true love relationship. I'll be happy when I have financial abundance. I could buy everything my heart desires. I could travel the world. I could give back to my family. I'll be happy when I have a shredded six pack. I could walk onto the beach with confidence. I feel like $1 million. I feel sexy. I'll be happy when that happens. So theoretically, we all understand that when we achieve those things, if we achieve those things, the imagined happiness is never the way that we truly imagine. Like in my case, I was severely disappointed. In your case as well, you have this goal, I'll be happy when, and it does not happen. So even saying that sentence, I'll be happy when, presupposes that right now you are not happy. So those of us who are intelligent and very self-aware, I would love for you to answer this question. If I'll be happy when is nonsense, how can you be happy now?
Very powerful question. And what I would say is that going back to the part where I said most people were never able to fully depend on the people they were supposed to be able to depend on, many of us high performers have developed this no victim mentality where it's like, no, I'm never a victim. I'm the master of my emotions. I'm the master of my destiny. I'm the master of everything, and everything is my doing of whatever happens, and I will take radical accountability. Okay, I'll take radical accountability. But here's the problem with that, is that you cannot physically take radical accountability for something that you were not in control of. You are not in control of the parents you were born to. You are not in control of the situation that happened to you from the ages of one to however long it takes you to be able to become conscious of who you are as a person, right? You're not in control. So when you are not conscious of yourself and your way of being, you are not in control of the entirety of the years before that moment, okay? And we have too many people out here taking this radical accountability without first being able to depend on somebody else in the sense of being able to not take accountability for their upbringing. The blame needs to go where it's supposed to be, right? Not to say that we're putting the blame on our parents, putting the blame on them in a negative way, but in a more objective way, by getting people to understand that I was not in control of so many of these insecurities that I have. I was not in control, right? So for me, I had this life in college where I was a starter as a true freshman on a Division I football team. I had really close to my family. I had all these friends. I was doing well in school. I could talk to the girls, get the girls, but I was missing something inside of myself. I didn't know what it was. And for a long time, I thought I was just effed up, to be honest with you. I was like, whoa, like this whole external world around me is coming together. But I'm like, I can't find any holes in it, but there's still a hole in me. I'm like, what is this? And it was because I believed the place that I was in, I had this belief system that everything was great in my childhood. Everything was fantastic. So I wasn't able to see the reality of the situation I talked about earlier, right? Not to blame my mother. My mom was a fucking amazing mom. Amazing mom. Right? But there's things that happened that acted upon her that she wasn't able to be in a healthy emotional state. And that's where the blame needs to go, right? Because there's so many of us that are walking around taking the blame for these ways of being without knowing that, hey, like I had no choice in the matter. I had no choice for those things that happened to me at that young age. So to be able to come to terms with that and say, hey, like, it's not my fault. It's not my fault that I feel this way. It's not. Because we're not in control of the parents we're born into. We're not. Anybody tries to argue that, you don't have a chance. Right? You don't. Now, we at a soul level, maybe we could have an argument, right? That's a whole other conversation. But really, you didn't have the choice from being here on this planet Earth. So being able to first separate yourself from all your traumas, right? Because most of us are like this is us, this is all of our traumas. We're like, oh, this is just who I am. I'm just a sad person. Oh, I'm just a mad person. Oh, I'm just somebody that can't think for myself or can't make decisions for myself. I always sacrifice myself, right? So this is just me. It's who I am. It's because the blame's not put where it needs to go. But when you're able to diagnose and analyze and understand your own upbringing, you're able to come to terms with the fact, say, hey, like, this is me. This is all of my insecurities. And really, it's an adaptation, right, to your environment when you're at a younger age. That's why we take on a lot of those insecurities or ways of being, because we at that time thought that we need to take on those adaptations to survive. I had to sacrifice my own emotions for mom to be okay to take care of me, right? And my survival was based off that. That's why we take those things on, right? So this is me. These are my insecurities and adaptations, and it's attached to me, right? It's not me. It's not this. It's attached to me, all right? And Asia, I remember us going through a session too of like, you just giving yourself that permission to say like, hey, dude, like, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't. Right? We went in and we understood, like, holy crap, like it wasn't. And you're able to create that separation between you and your insecurities. Right? I've done that myself. Right? But so the first step is being able to create that separation between you and your insecurities. And that's the problem with you look at all these psychologists and therapists too. They're saying, oh, well, you have this disorder. You are this disorder. You are depressed. Oh, you are this eating disorder. No, fuck you. That's how I feel. Because it's a lie they're telling people to get them to try to cope with whatever it is they're dealing with. But then those people end up surviving their life at a 75% capacity because they accept themselves as being that thing, right? They accept themselves as being this. But that's not true. That's not true. This is you and this is all your insecurities. It's just attached to you, right? They're just attached to you. Once you're able to create that separation through, there's energetic work that has to happen to be able to do that. It's not just like all logical and mental. It's an energetic connection to the understanding. Which would cause maybe you to hire a coach or something like that, right? But really, like, that's the truth. And once you're able to create that separation between you and your insecurities and your adaptations, it's just attached to you, you're then able to take the next step. But you got too many people walking around taking radical accountability before they're able to actually put the blame where it's supposed to go. Now, once you're able to do that, you then from that place forward can take that accountability that you want to take. Right? But you have to get put the blame where it is due, objectively, not blaming our parents and saying, hey, how could you? But looking at it objectively and saying, hey, this happened. I took on this adaptation, the reality of the situation.
That's very, very powerful. Yes, yes, yes. And I got a lot of breakthroughs like I always do on our calls. I have these massive shifts and insights, you know, and I do think about just our nature as human beings, you know, like if we think about, let's say animals, right? So animals rely on pure instinct, and animals don't have the frontal lobe, the part of our brain where we have imagination. So they often don't, you know, think about the past or perceive the future. They live in the present moment, and it's just here and now, and it's instinct, and it's hormones. I'm hungry. I'm horny. Sex, food, escape, danger, adrenaline. So they're just reacting to their environment, and they have this insane level of peace because they're not talking about what happened in 1995, you know? And because of that, they're not ruled by their thoughts, right? Whereas humans, our brains are having 60, 70,000 thoughts a day. And majority of those thoughts are negative or repetitive or fearing these things that may or may not happen. And when we think about ourselves with these blank slates, right? We're just pure. We're just pure a human being. But then our brain and our frontal lobe is creating all of these situations, and most of them are making us suffer. And to the degree of how much we think is the degree of how much we suffer. And I forgot the quote or who came up with it, but it was along the lines of like, the less you think, the happier you'll be. And it doesn't mean to be like brain dead and be a vegetable laying on a bed, but it's the ability to be present to the moment here and now. We're connecting, not thinking. Thinking about your other sense perceptions, because the moment we are thinking, we're lost in thought, right? We're not here and now. My breath. Okay, that's a way of getting into the moment. My feeling. I just had surgery a week ago. I have pain. Pain is a great way to get present. This taps me into the present moment. But these other feelings outside of this nonstop chatter in my mind is a powerful way. And I think you gave me a big insight just about how I sometimes fall back into my old story, you know? Well, prior to getting into the amazing relationship I am now, I had this story about why I cannot be in a relationship. You know, growing up, because of my parental dynamic and the challenges I had in my childhood, I'm not going to be a good boyfriend. I could never be good in a relationship. Based on my past relationships that didn't work out, I don't think love exists. I think I'm going to be a bachelor for the rest of my life. That's a shitty story. But it's a story and it's not even true. And then I met Rafaela and she's the love of my life and it's this incredible experience that now I am shocked. And being with her over the past 4 months destroyed so many of my bullshit stories and I'm blown away. It's like, whoa, I could commit to one person. Whoa, I could be romantic. I could be loving. I could get kind. Wow. After 3 months, a woman doesn't annoy me. I love having her. It's like so cool. You know, and it's so interesting. And what I'm saying is that when we are just sitting there, we're contemplating all of these different scenarios. You know, I regret doing all this last weekend. These people think so poorly of me. They're not even thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. And I think what came to me was like, this is a story that people have just about their past. Because the color of my skin, I have privilege. Because of the color of my skin, I get discriminated. Is it true? Are you going to really question that? Are you going to live your whole life by this? And I think for me, the older I get, the more I unravel. Like you were saying, it's like a subtractive process. This belief that I've had for decades, is it really true? Is it really serving me? Can I just let it go? Because I don't know. I don't know. So many beliefs that I've had, they were completely shattered. And I realized how important beliefs are. And the fact that through working with you, I question a lot of my beliefs, you know, beliefs that I've held on. I clenched onto them And then I realized, you know, I'd much rather have a mind that is opened by curiosity than one that is closed by belief.
Absolutely. Man, the two quotes that you gave too, the one about happiness, that one really struck a chord with me. I want to get back to this quote that you just gave right now too. The biggest thing I want to hone in on with people is that you will not be able to find happiness through trying to find happiness.
True.
And I think the majority of people out there, we want to be able just to read a book about enlightenment. We want to read a book about happiness, how to be happy, how to this. We just want to be able to say, hey, you know what? I read it. I have the knowledge now. I'm going to be able to embody it. Boom. And so you're trying to now be happy. But in reality, the thing that's making you so unhappy in the first place is the fact that you're trying. So now you're trying to be happy, which is leading you to this perpetual process of still trying, which is the source of your unhappiness. So you're trying to be happy through using the thing that's causing you to be unhappy. Does that make sense?
That's true.
So it's the element of trying, right? And so the question is well, how is it that I find happiness, and how do I find this element of joy that we're talking about? And simply put, it's through the unlearning process of who you're not. And the question is, okay, well, how do you do that? Well, it's doing things that challenge your belief system. I know you talked about with you getting into this relationship with Raphael. Dude, for me, like, it took me 4 months to be able to come to terms with the fact of how much I cared about the girl that I'm with right now. I fought it so much. My belief system was like, no, you're not ready. No, you haven't done this yet. No, you haven't. All these different things. And finally, I did it. And it felt so good. But that shattered a belief system right there, right? And so what it takes is you being able to do something against what your brain's telling you to do that you know is right. And that helps shatter those belief systems. Doing the difficult, tough things that you know that you need to do or want to do for yourself. But also just simply doing, it can be done through a lot of the unlearning process and work that I do or the different coaches do. And then you don't have to necessarily go experience it in the real world, and you get it handled before that. It's funny I said real world. But the fact that you can unravel some of that and unlearn some of that through these like breakthroughs. And it's crazy because even like you and I first speaking, there's some things that I said that your brain is like, no, that's not true. No, right? Because there's the deep rooted belief system is so deep. And so there's things that we can hear and we can think that we're embodying and it's truth. But until we give ourselves the permission to be able to say, hey, maybe some of the belief systems I have aren't right, that then opens the door for you to be able to see other things. But if you're so strict and gung-ho about a belief system that you may have, when I say you don't mean you, AJ, I mean just people in general, myself included, it makes it much more difficult to be able to unravel or unlearn everything that you learned to do or be. So by one saying, hey, that acceptance process, saying, hey, like a lot of the things and ways of being that I have right now aren't really mine, and I'm open to learning other things, that helps begin the process of you being able to see some of your insecurities and then being able to handle them head on by just having that acceptance realization that like, hey, maybe I'm not who I think that I am, and I'm not in as much control as I think that I am. So the process of you actually going out and doing things that are more difficult for yourself, but first being open to the idea that your ways of being might not be actually your ways of being.
True. True. Yes. And like I said, all it takes is one powerful breakthrough that'll change your life forever. You know, you could have an entire life, like I said, with myself, decades of this one belief, and then it becomes shattered. And that's a lot of what you helped me with. And besides all the things I mentioned you helped me with and unraveling all of these deep-rooted stories, I'm curious for you, so everyone could really get to understand, like, what type of people do you love working with, right? And what type of transformations do you create with your coaching clients?
Yeah, I love working with people that are inspired to change the world. I think that's probably like the biggest demographic that I love to work with, because normally they're the ones that have the hardest time being able to make it about themselves. And ultimately, that's why we end up getting into issues and we have the unhappiness, because we're living our life for other people. Now, a lot of people that are listening might say, oh, well, you know, if I'm not living my life for other people, that means I'm selfish. Right? And they have this noble tendency, and you hearing that might piss you off a little bit, but that's okay. right? Maybe your religion taught you that you have to sacrifice yourself for everybody else. Maybe it didn't, right? But bottom line is when you continue to live your life for everybody else, I had to learn this lesson myself, and not make it about you, which is what the world's doing right now in totality, you're unable to actually create long-term change, not only in the world, but also yourself. So being able to make it about yourself and the challenge associated with getting some of these people that are so deep-rooted in this belief system that they have to do things for everybody else to feel good about themselves, it's an addiction. It's an addiction. It can be used as a way to prevent yourself from actually confronting your deeper-rooted issues, which I've had. I've struggled with the same thing, right? So bottom line is that the people that I want to work with are people that I'm most similar to, right? People that felt like they wanted to change the world, but need to realize that it's actually not about changing the world, it's about changing yourself, then giving yourself the ability to be able to healthfully change the world, right? So I think a lot of people right now, more than ever, everybody wants to try to change the world right now, right? But until everybody makes it about numero uno and realizes that it's not being selfish to do so, you're not going to be able to heal yourself. You won't. You don't have a chance, right? And I had to learn that lesson myself. And I had a phenomenal coach walk me through that.
Right? Yes. Yes. Now that's powerful. You know, thanks for sharing those distinctions, you know, and like I was mentioned earlier, like the greatest shifts of my life came through coaching. And that's why I will never live a single day without having a coach, being in a mastermind, having some mentor that I could speak to on a weekly basis that could allow me to, one, vent, and number two, unravel my bullshit stories, give me new breakthroughs, and also constantly improve and progress. You know, and I could tell you the moments in my life that I didn't have a coach were the worst moments. Bad months of business, depression, just horrible anxiety, because I know myself, I cannot constantly progress unless I have some type of accountability and leadership. Now, for the people that are listening right now and they're saying, wow, Kian is amazing. He is awesome. I would love to chat with him, connect with him, find out more about what he does. I mentioned how much you've helped me, and how can you help other people? How could they find you?
Now, well, I'm kind of like, I wouldn't call myself hidden, but I have a private Instagram. I'm not really very active on social media. Sometimes I'll feel inspired to post a picture or something. But if people out there, it is more difficult to maybe reach out to me. So the people that feel pulled to, I would ask that you give yourself that permission to do so and recognize that it's a safe space for you to do so. And that if you do decide to, I'll recognize the value in that. And I would love to be able to have a conversation with you, because I know how difficult it is a lot of times for people to be able to take that step to realizing that, hey, like, maybe I've been effing up, right? And so the fact that you have the balls, or you're the woman, to be able to say, hey, I have these issues and I want to talk to Kian about it, I'll talk to you. I'd love to do that. So just reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram. You might have to follow me on Instagram first. I'm not sure how that works, but just shoot me a message and we can figure something out.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's one thing that I find interesting. It's very unique. You know, I'm an online marketer, so I'm very big on self-aggrandizement. I'm always, you know, putting posts and videos and stories, because I just love just putting my message out there, you know? And then you're, on the other end, are more low-key. It's like your clients find you. It's like interesting, because you built your whole practice based on the amazing results you get. And, you know, people that are raving fans like me, I'm like, I have to get Kian on here, have a great conversation. The world's got to see his genius. So it is quite fascinating. But to make it easy for everyone, I'll put your Facebook into the show notes and the link. And this way, people want to connect with you. I think it's easier to message on Facebook, because I think on Instagram, it blocks your messages unless you're following someone.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. Cool. So to close things off, right? I love asking this question, because it kind of sums up someone's entire life work. And it really gives a really powerful way of ending an amazing conversation like this. So I live in New York City, and we have Times Square. This is the center of civilization. And let's say we all chipped in and we got this huge billboard for Kian. For the next 20 years, it's going to have one message for all of humanity to see, what sentence would you put on that billboard?
Well, the first thing I want to say is, AJ and I did not speak about this beforehand, so I'm completely put on the spot. But what it would say is, it immediately came to me, make it about you.
Ah.
Make it about you, because that was probably the most powerful wisdom that I was ever told, was make it about you. Because that gave me the permission to be able to step into my genius, giving me the ability to be able to come on this call with you and give this information to anybody that's listening. Because if I didn't make it about me, I wouldn't be on this call right now with you, and people wouldn't be learning these things they need to learn.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I would love for you to elaborate a little bit on make it about you, because I think I know what it is, but I would love to get more clarification.
Yeah, make it about you means that instead of trying, long story short, instead of trying to change the world, you just focus on changing yourself. Mm. And you become so focused on being able to pour into you, not from the standpoint of like the self-love shit that everybody talks about, like, hey, I'm going to go get self-love, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to do it. No, not that. That stuff's important, but it's not the real work that needs to be done. So making it about you is making the decision to commit to your joy and doing whatever it takes to be able to get to that place. And I know that might be kind of a loaded gun for anybody listening that might be more heavily favored in maybe like a selfish kind of way. But really, it comes down to you being able to confront your deeper rooted insecurities and uncovering who you truly are at your core. Because the moment you start to live for yourself, when I say for yourself, your higher self as you, independent of all the things that you've learned to be, you're then able to show the world your gift, the gift that God gave you. And I would not say that God put us here to be miserable and live in guilt and shame. Okay, so clearly there's something wrong with the system that we have. Okay, so what our system teaches us is that we need to make it about everybody else, God, others, yourself, right? You can say that all day, but why are you unhappy? Because you're making it about everybody else. You're not making it about your own joy. And when you're able to pour into yourself and become more self-full, there's a difference, not selfish, self-full, you're then able to pour out from your own glass and fall into other people's. Like I said, I wouldn't be on this call right now with you delivering this information if I wouldn't have made the decision to make it about me, right? So making it about you is learning the process of how to commit to you, as your higher self, not to your insecurities.
I love that. I love that. It's powerful. It reminds me of the Gandhi quote, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And it's like really that level of, you know, work on you for you, and I'll work on me for me. And it's that level of just, you know, the world would be a better place if there was no blame, because right, most of the world's problems are because we blame others. You know, in my relationship, I say, Raphael, I'll be the best Raphael you could be. I'll be the best AJ I could be. And we'll meet in the middle, as opposed to saying, Raphael, you got to fix all of these things about yourself, but I'm perfect. So it really applies to everywhere in life.
Absolutely. It's one of the most difficult things that we can do, because as humans, especially right now, there's so much fear that we don't really have. A lot of people don't have the capacity to see the element of investment in that, because you don't see the fruits of your labor right away when you do that. It's actually very painful, and it's difficult, because you're questioning who you are, and that's really uncomfortable for our deeply programmed brain to do that. So it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. You're going to feel like you're not making very much change at all. You're just going to feel like you're torturing yourself. Right? That's how it's going to feel at the beginning. So because people aren't really in the position to understand that, because there's so much fear and uncertainty, it makes it more difficult for people to make it about themselves, which is why people now more than ever are making it about everybody else. Because the amount of fear that's there, people are living in a state of survival, which causes them not to be able to see the importance of investment of being okay with not seeing the fruits of your labor right away.
Absolutely. Yes. So true. So that being said, connect with Mr. Kyen Logge. And if you find him on Facebook, it's K-E-Y-N-L-A-G-E. He is the man you got to see. And when you talk to him, it's the place to be. He'll set you free. Kyen.
Mic drop. Thank you, AJ. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on, and thank you for the massive impact you're having on my life and for all the people you're helping, man. You're making such a difference. I really appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Online Super Coach Podcast. If you like this show, share it with your friends and subscribe on iTunes. For show notes and for free training on how you can attract, convert, and deliver like a $1 million online coach, visit OnlineSuperCoach.com.